Democrat of the day. We head down to 58A. The DFL-endorsed candidate is Erin Priest. She is kind enough to join us today to talk about herself and her campaign. Hi, Erin. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. I will say that when I was talking to you about setting this up, you had said, I am teaching until 3:30, so I can't join you before then. Where are you teaching at?
I teach at one of the elementary schools in Lakeville, which is the district I'm running in. So I'm balancing running a campaign and teaching at home and helping my two own children with their schoolwork, too. So kind of a busy day, so I'm glad we could squeeze everything in.
I appreciate that, too. What grade are you teaching down there?
I teach English as a second language.
Okay.
So I have kindergartners through fifth graders.
The ELL program. I hope it's going well. I know that you are just, I'll praise you, but I'll praise all teachers at the same time. This was unexpected. I think you guys have done a magnificent job on very short notice, completely changing everything to try to get to a point where we can get the kids to where they get to the next grade. Congratulations on that. I hope it's been going well for you.
Thank you. Yeah, obviously it's never something we expected to be doing. And I always joked that my job was probably the one job you could never do at home. But it turns out we can. It's not as effective and as wonderful as seeing those kids in class and getting those hugs and seeing their smiles and having that relationship with kids in person. But it really helps that it was toward the end of the school year because we already had time to build classroom routines and have a close relationship with our students already. So we're just going off of that and doing our best through the end of the year.
Well, you've already introduced a little bit of yourself, talking about being a teacher and a mom. Why don't you give us a little bit more of a background on yourself and why exactly you decided you're going to run for House Seat 58A?
Sure. About 5 years ago, I voted. I cared about my community, but I wasn't very politically active. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't even know who represented me in the legislature in Minnesota. But I started paying more and more attention to the gun violence in our country and getting more and more frustrated with it. And I found an organization called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And it's an anti-gun violence organization, which is nonpartisan. So we work with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle just to come up with common sense solutions to prevent gun violence. And through that organization, I learned how to advocate for myself and the issues I cared about. And I went to the Capitol many years in a row asking for criminal background checks before gun sales and red flag laws. And I just kind of fell in love with the process and being involved and liked feeling like I could actually make a difference and make an impact. But I still never thought of myself as a candidate. I just kind of thought, I'm not a politician. I'm just a regular person. But after a while and being asked several times to run, I kind of realized, we do need more regular people in the legislature because, when people are in St. Paul for years and years, they can sometimes get out of touch with the real issues that families are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And because I am a mom and a teacher and, I am seeing all these impacts that lawmakers have on the everyday lives of people here in Minnesota. So I'm excited. I'm a first-time candidate, but I've been involved in House campaigns kind of behind the scenes before. So it's been interesting being involved as a candidate this time.
It's interesting you bring up the gun violence. We haven't talked that much about it because of obviously coronavirus. But the reality is your perspective obviously is very different than most of us. You work in a school. We see these mass shootings in schools. You're like every teacher I know, where basically when it comes to protecting your kids, you'll do anything you can. And so this stuff scares you to death. And now you see it to where not only is the message of, we need to, kind of control this a little bit so we don't have massacres in our schools, but now it's more the guns are everywhere. You got anti-protesters of whatever, COVID-19, you want to protest what the governor's doing, that's fine. Why do you need a gun? Why are the people in Michigan bringing guns and threatening the legislature where they have to shut down the legislature? It's the way this path has gone is not that we didn't learn our lesson from the gun massacres that we've had in schools, in churches, and in Las Vegas, and in nightclubs. We've not learned this, and it seems like we've gone even further to where now the gun is the go-to threatening thing if you just don't like the line. Was that story out of Orlando? Guy pulls a gun because he didn't want to wait in line at the deli. You know, and it's and we have a clear we clearly have a real problem with guns in this country at this point.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I grew up, my dad was a hunter, and most people in my family actually are responsible gun owners, and that's not the issue. The issue is these people that have taken on guns as kind of the symbol of extreme hypermasculinity and anti-government, and it's that sort of extremism that's an issue. And really, we just, so many studies have shown that it's not about taking away guns. It's not the guns themselves, but it's about keeping guns out of the hands of people who have a history of violence.
Yes.
Because the best way to predict future violence is showing a history of violence in the past. Mm-hmm. So, you know, studies have really shown that the states that do have criminal background checks before all gun sales, they have gun violence cut in about half. And that's across the board. That's, you know, violence against police, domestic violence, even suicide rates go down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's very effective. And the vast majority of Minnesotans support common sense laws like background checks and red flag laws. So it's just been very frustrating that we haven't been able to pass that here. So that's definitely going to be one of my priorities in the legislature.
And once again, family of hunters. We go. My family goes hunting every year. Hunting. This is not about hunting weapons.
Right.
But I was also in the military, and there are guns where the guy, when he sits down with a piece of paper and a pencil to start designing it, is designing it to kill human beings. And the question is if we're going to allow those within our society, shouldn't we have some basic safety measures that allow us to know that there are some safety protocols in place? And I think I'm glad you're bringing this topic up because we cannot allow that issue to be just swept aside because we have too many other noises out there that are, you know, preoccupying us. We have to make sure we keep focusing on the fact that we have a real problem with guns in this country. And unless we start looking at trying to, you know, have a culture where we have the Second Amendment, but we also have common sense rules in place, we're not going to end up, we're going to end up in a far worse place again. Obviously, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about education. One of the things which is interesting, and I talked – this is Democrat of the Day on Tuesday. Talked to someone who moved up here from Arizona, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how great the schools are in Minnesota. And so you get real protective when people start talking about cuts. Republicans have always looked at the education system as a place to cut and shift money around. We don't need to be cutting funds. We need to be investing more into education. Would you agree on that?
Yeah. So main issue, and I will agree that Minnesota has some fantastic schools, and Lakeville in particular has amazing schools. This is why my family moved to Lakeville, so that my kids could go to school here. But the problem we're seeing is that, so we have this mandate to educate or to fulfill all of our special education needs, which is absolutely the right thing to do. We should be educating all students. But it's never been fully funded at the state level or at the federal level. So what we're having to do is all our local districts are taking money out of our general education fund to fund special education. And that's resulting in cuts to student services, like counselors. It's making our class sizes go up. We have not enough technology or updated technology. And so it's really having a big impact on our schools. And year after year, we ask for money, and especially for, you know, to help with the cost of inflation. And, you know, some people say we don't want to just throw money at the problem, but that's not what we're trying to do. It's to fund specific programs that we know will help students succeed. And we do have a responsibility to close the opportunity gap between our white students and students of color, who we have one of the worst achievement gaps in the country. So, there's a lot that we could do if we didn't have to divert those funds from our general education fund.
Basically,
we're just asking the state to live up to the obligations to pay for those programs.
I love how they phrase it. Oh, yeah, we're going to put an unfunded mandate, which, by the way, this is you want to know why that you have inner school problems with funding in inner city schools as well as rural country schools. It is because of these unfunded mandates. And you said it exactly. You have to pull money out of your general budget. And then you say, well, we don't have enough money, and people scream, well, you need to cut the fat. The reality is you can't just put an expenditure on each one of these school districts, not fund it, and then expect them to somehow, I don't know, grow the money. Did you plant any of those money trees? Oh, I didn't know we could, you know. But that's the reality. It's exactly the problem.
Yeah. In my district, we have to take out $12.5 million every single school year out of our general fund to pay for special education because we have this funding gap, basically. And so we haven't been able to find any money trees here, but my district has been asking the local taxpayers to vote for levies year after year. Just last fall, luckily, two of them passed, which was very lucky for our schools. But, you know, it's not fair to the local property owners to have to keep shouldering this burden. It's really something that should be funded at the state level, so it's less of a burden on our local taxpayers.
Obviously, let's talk about your district really quick. The district we are looking at is 58A. It's basically the north part of Lakeville, correct?
It's almost the entire city of Lakeville.
Almost the entire, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And it's right off of 35 down in the South Metro. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is currently, the seat is currently held by the Republicans, correct?
Yes. And it has been for 32 years.
We can change that this year. I think, because I know a lot of people, by the way, your story about moving to Lakeville, great schools, Lakeville schools I've heard are just sensational. Lakeville North, Lakeville South. And so, you know, you've got some great schools down there. I know a lot of great people who live down in Lakeville in that area. And this is a district that has been growing more and more blue as we've gone election. This is a seat we can pick up and we can flip to the DFL, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think you're right that a lot of families are moving here for the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also one of the last suburbs that still have some farmland that's being developed into new housing developments.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just had exponential growth in this area in the last few years. And the people moving here are more progressive than, you know, the typical historical people in Lakeville. So we've seen such a change in demographics that we really do think that it can flip this year.
Well, and you need someone who sees that. This is why we need to help Erin get into the seat. She sees the change. She's just not going to put a cookie cutter process in place and say, we've been doing this for 30 some years this way. We're going to do it differently because the district is changing. Erin Priest is the candidate for 58A, and you can help her out. I want to drive people to your website. It's erinpriest.com, right?
Yes. Yes. That would be wonderful. And right now we would love the support. We need volunteers and donations and any support you can give us to help us flip the seat to blue.
And we also should mention as well, Erin, that in this day and age, that volunteering is going to take all the candidates are still working on their game plan as far as volunteering goes, because we're working in a very different world with coronavirus. But there will be volunteer opportunities. What they are, Erin's campaign will figure that out. Donations always work.
Campaign. There's always work to do.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot of remote work, where it's going to be phone banking online and things like that instead of the door knocking like we traditionally do. But we're still able to make tons of contact with voters and build relationships with people in the community.
Absolutely. And, of course, donations are always welcome. Erin Priest, erinpriest.com, erinpriese.com. I'll link to all this on social media a little bit later on. Erin, I'm glad you're running. All my best. I think we can pick this seat up for the DFL. So I hope to see you in St. Paul in November, or it'll be actually January of next year.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you very much. Erin Priest is Democrat of the Day, coming on from Lakeville there. Let's take a break, come in with our final segment for the week. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.